There are shows with psychics.
And there are shows with doctors.
But there's no show like The Psychic and the Doc.
Your practical paranormal power unleashed.
This show synthesizes the talents of world-class medium Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer,
and street smart spiritualist, behavioral psychologist, Dr. Pat Basile. All subjects are on the table and no topic is taboo. Inspiration, insight,
action, and fun as Mark Anthony connects callers with loved ones in spirit.
In tandem with Dr. Pat's fresh, no-nonsense, street smart, intuitive insights. And she is hilarious.
Extraordinary problems
require extraordinary solutions, which may come from this side
or the other side. This is The Psychic
and the Doc, and it starts now.
Welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I got to tell you, we're fired up. I'm a little fired up today. This is a special edition of The Psychic and the Doc. First out of the gate, I need to congratulate Mark Anthony on his book launch. Yay for that book. Oh, I'm telling you, it's like the frequency of everything. And we have a very special show today. I love this. You know, I've been on a couple of calls today, speaking with people that want to bring their voice to the network, all different walks of life. And I find that the people that I'm talking with, just like today with Mark Medley, we're talking to people that know what it's like to rise up. And I want to tell you what I mean by that, Mark Anthony, and Mark Medley, both Marks. That's Mark right. Squared.
We have the Marx brothers today.
Mark, I just want to say that. That's all I learned about that kind of math. Here's what I know and what I'm seeing after doing this 18 years. There's something changing in the air. There's something in a change. There's something afoot. And it's a good stuff. It's a good thing. It's like the background. If you look at the background of Mark Medley, and you look at that background, and you know what you're going to see back there. You're going to see an expansive nature, but I'm going to tell you what you're also going to see. You're going to see something that says you can climb up. It doesn't matter where you're from, you can climb up. Today's show is this: if I can help somebody, then living, right, then my living will not be in vain. If I can help somebody, my living will not be in vain. And I love this because this is the point we get to where we have to realize that we stand on the shoulders of people come before. Right. We stand on the shoulders of people come before. Whether it's, in my case, Amy Sarrow pulling me to the back of the room saying, I believe in you, and I'm stuttering my way through that class. It doesn't matter. But today, this is a special show because we're getting ready to rise up in a way we've not done before. Conversations are powerful, and yet they're fun. People are showing up in ways they didn't think they were capable of showing up. We are more, whatever you think you are more than that. That is what today's show is about. Right, Mark?
It absolutely, absolutely is. Absolutely is. And, you know, one of my heroes is Gandhi, who was a lawyer who left that behind to pursue a much more spiritual path. And he once said, be the change you wish to see in the world. And our guest today is the living embodiment of that change, and in so many ways, a modern day Renaissance man. Professor Mark Medley is a principal of an elementary and middle school and the Saturday morning talk show host of The Reading Circle with Mark Medley. He attended the William Paterson College in Wayne, New Jersey, where he earned a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Business Administration, and he holds a Master's in Corporate and Organizational Communications degree from Fairleigh Dickinson University and a Master's in Education Leadership from William Paterson University. He's also studied leadership courses at Princeton and Harvard and serves on the advisory board for Universal Right Publications. But Professor Medley is also the principal of the Young Men's Leadership Academy, And this is an awesome organization that we're going to talk about today. And he is listed in several Who's Who's publications and acknowledged for his excellence as an educator and intellectual. He's received numerous awards, some of which include the New Jersey Air National Guard Outstanding Soldier of the Year. Thank you for your service. The State of New Jersey's Department of Education's Governor's Teachers Recognition Award, Teacher of the Year Award, and Alpha Man of the Year Award. Welcome to the Psychic in the Doc, Modern Day Renaissance Man, Professor Mark Medley. Great to have you here. Welcome aboard.
Well, I tell you what, it is great to be here. I know, and many times with our greetings, a lot of times people will say, good to see you. And a lot of time we'll respond back, good to be seen. So I'm glad to be here with you.
Yeah. You know, before we get into the nitty gritty, all right, Alpha Man of the Year Award, that one I got to ask about.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I had to apply. I'm an application in for that one myself.
Yeah, and you know, interestingly enough, Alpha has multiple meanings. In this particular case, is my fraternal. My fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. And I just having this conversation earlier today as well. People ask a lot of times, you're still involved in a fraternity? And the answer is yes, because we have what they call the Divine Nine. That's the African-American communities, fraternities. And we extend beyond the parties in college and actually forever do community service. So community service is a part of that. So to obtain Alpha Man of the Year status, it's just, you know, the brothers come based on what you've done for the year, what have you, and they vote and they nominate. And then if you won, if you're chosen, you're chosen.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is so important, because I think sometimes we have to think about our legacy, right? That, like, that word right there is like, it's a word that gets thrown around, but we want to think about what it is we're going to leave behind. You know, what is we're going to leave behind? And when you think about, you know, going through the education system, the relationships you make, what happens when you all get together, this is now me speaking from my own experiences, people keep you accountable. Like, you can always tell the people that don't show up. Like, for that year, you're like, okay, what were they doing, right? But right. There's a level of this where you put the synergy of folks that have taken that journey together, right? How do we pass that synergy on to our youth? How do we pass that on?
Well, a few things, especially working with younger kids. A lot of times, the conversations and the experiences that you're having now in education and with children, it won't come back to them until some years later. That's one of the things in terms of teaching, that the reward may not come until later on. I still see students now who I taught back in 2000, who are now, and they were eighth graders at that time, and now they're 29, 30, 32, 33, or what have you. And then they will come back and say, I remember a conversation we had when I was in your eighth grade class. That's when a teacher or a principal begins to get their reward. A lot of times it's not immediate.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we don't, I mean, do we do it for the reward, or do we do it to reward? And what I mean by that is, I know that growing up in the inner city in New York City, you know, some of the things that I've experienced through the grace of the angels like you, Mark, that have come along and have said, I think enough about you. I'm going to take you to the back of the classroom here, and I'm going to let you go to summer school so you can get that paper.
Right.
Even though we know you can't read, Pat, we're just going to put you into school just to see if you can put a little paragraph or something together. Right. Those are like angels that see something. And Mark, isn't that part of your journey too? Isn't it in, like you started out saying, is when you tell someone you see them, it is such a powerful gift in a world where so many can become invisible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for so many of our children, and I won't say it's just the inner city, but so many in the urban areas and the inner city areas, they really are or feel as if they are invisible. So for somebody to take the time to actually talk with them, and that's what today, the guidance counselor and I, we were actually calling down eighth graders. I would go on the PA system and call down a different eighth grader every 15 minutes or so. And we would just have a talk. You're not in trouble. I know when you come to the principal's office, you think you're in trouble. But we just wanted to talk with you. And what I shared with the guidance counselor when each one would leave, I said, you know what, we're going to continue to do this because these are the conversations you would think they're having at home, but they're not, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And because of that, that relationship is being built. That's where that reward is coming in, Pat, Dr. Pat, that you were talking yeah. about a couple of minutes ago, to see the expressions on their face, to see when they leave and they look at you like, wow, you actually talk to me as a person.
Yeah. You know, I want to follow up on that because I know that you're very active with the Young Men's Leadership Academy. Now, what is that? What are its objectives and how does the academy work?
All right. So in the Patterson Public School Systems, we have many large schools. As a matter of fact, I've been principal of schools with 500 or 600, 700 kids. The Young Men's Leadership Academy is a single gender school, only males in there, just what it says, young men. And our objective is to coach these young boys to one day become leaders. Now, they're leaders in their own rights now. As a matter of fact, we don't even call them, I mean, at any given day, you can hear me call them gentlemen, scholar, prince, or lion, because our mascot is that of a lion. So on any given day, I will address them that way. But it's this whole notion of building self-esteem, helping them understand, even though society may be saying that you're nothing, we're telling you that you're something. And not only are you something, but you're going to be even greater than you are now.
You know, I know I start off quoting Gandhi. I'm going to another one of my favorites, Mother Teresa. And you said something that just resonated with me. And Dr. Pat said this as well. And this is a theme that comes up on the psychic and the doc a lot. Mother Teresa said, nothing is worse than meaning absolutely nothing to anyone.
Correct.
And certainly in the context that she said it was caring for terminally ill people in Calcutta. But I think the appeal of that statement is global. And what I'm hearing you say is that there's probably a lot of children, and it doesn't have to be inner city, it could be rural, could be suburban, whatever. And even kids that grow up in the, on paper, you know, the mom and the dad, you know, and everything on paper looks great, but they're just marginalized or they're not validated or nobody listens to them. And that's what it sounds like is the Young Men's Leadership Academy is not only listening, but validating.
Absolutely. You're absolutely on point. You're absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, we do a lot of work with social emotional learning, SEL. We do a lot of work with restorative practice, restorative justice. We try to get away from suspensions, if you will. We not to say that they're not held accountable, not to say that consequences aren't levied when needed, but we really don't want to do the what they call the prison, what do they call it, the pipeline to prison. We really don't want to set that up thinking that, you know, if you do something wrong, automatically you're punished or you're suspended. And I've been in schools where, again, I've had the highest suspension rate in the district. But in this particular area, we're trying to help the boys understand, we're going to teach you the way to go. If you make a mistake, we expect you to learn from it. This is where that whole notion of, I don't have a problem with you making a mistake, but I do look for you to learn from the mistake you made. So Mark, your point of being validated, yes, a lot of our children, simply because they come from single moms or single parent homes, have already been written off. They've been written off in society, and now they're coming up. So that's the other thing we give at the school too. The majority of my teachers are males. They have the opportunity to be exposed to a male figure that they may not be getting at home.
Yeah. I have to tell you, it's really powerful. You know, if you go up in a family where you have a single parent, and we're seeing this more and more and more. I mean, this is across the board. We're just the divorce rate, kids that are being, you know, put into situations where they have one parent or another or not any. And a lot of times, you know, they don't have a male figure, right? We have to figure that out. And I think that's what you're doing. We have to figure that out because in the absence of that, there are so many other, let's say, imagery and things out there that could fill that in for you, but not like in a good way.
Yeah.
And, and, you know, so what you're talking about is helping somebody understand that the mistake you make today is going to be the catalyst for your greatest success in the future.
Correct.
If you're getting the right mentorship.
Correct. Yes. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with the both of you more. And I can give real time situations. I had a conversation with a child today. We were talking about dropping out of high school. Child says, well, you have a lot of rappers who became successful. They dropped out of high school. I said, don't be deceived. And I helped them understand, you know what? If you don't know how to count your money, somebody's going to take your money. You're a money manager. Oh, I'll get somebody to money. But if you don't know how much you're supposed to have, if they take some of it, you will never know. So this is where math and accounting and everything else that we're trying to teach you comes in. You need to know how to count your money if you're going to make a lot of money.
You know, so, I was a criminal defense lawyer, and I'll say one thing about a lot of my uneducated clients. Boy, did they know the metric system really well. Okay. Because if you sell a gram of this or a kilo of that, man, they knew that down. And they knew their geography, usually as it related to Central and South America, because of where the drugs came from, you know. Right. But aside from that, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, you said something about punitive measures. And I reviewed the YMLA handbook, which applies to students as well as teachers. And here's something that I found really fascinating. Homework is an opportunity to extend student learning beyond the school day and may be assigned to promote the development of study skills, effective time management, independence, responsibility, and academic confidence. Teachers may not assign homework as a form of disciplinary action. Now, I went to Catholic school my first 6 years, and they're really into discipline, okay? And they used homework. I remember one time there was this one kid, he did something, and it really aggravated the teacher, who was a nun. And she said, well, I'll just call him Michael. Michael has no homework tonight. And he's sitting there like he got off. He goes, but everyone else has double homework tonight.
That's a different twist.
Yeah, it's that, you know, Catholics have had centuries of these, you know, mind, you know, and certainly it did not win him any popularity contest. But explain to me your philosophy on homework so it's not to be used as a punitive measure, because I'm seeing a lot in kids now. Their parents say, oh, they don't have homework. They don't give them homework. And it's like, I can't fathom. I mean, I went to law school. Both of you have advanced degrees, PhDs. I mean, I cannot fathom any type of education without some form of homework. Mark, Professor Medley, what is your philosophy about homework, and why is it not to be used as a punitive measure?
Well, the thinking with homework is just like if you were to take it to a sport, that homework actually is your practice, that if you want to get better at anything, you have to practice. So when you have homework, you're actually getting a chance to practice what the teacher gave you in the classroom. So that's the thinking behind it. And you don't have to have 50 problems. This is what we discuss with the teachers. They don't have to have 50 problems to determine whether or not they know the concept. Maybe you'll give 5. Maybe you'll give 8. But you don't need 50 of them to give that. Now, in terms of it not being punitive, and I'm real big on this, particularly with reading and math, because you don't want the child to associate something negative with something that they ought to, at some point, learn to love. Now, as you know, for the most part, everything that I do is reading related. So yes. I definitely don't want to have a child associating when I want to read a book or when I'm reading a book, I'm now associating the reading of the book with something negative. Wait a minute. I had to read 10 chapters for punishment. So now you've turned me off to reading. Or I had to do 50 math problems. Now you've turned me off to math. So I'm constantly encouraging the teachers, don't ever tag an assignment or reading or math and assign it as punishment, because I don't want the child in their mind to connect punishment with something that we're hoping that they learn to love.
Dr. Pat, I see that look on your face. There's a story there. I know that. And I'm a lawyer, a medium, and a media, a lawyer, a Catholic, and a medium. I know guilt when I see it. Come on, Dr. Pat.
You know, the thing that just blows me away is, Mark, is when I hear you speaking about that, it's just me. It makes common sense, because now let's play it forward. Now you an adult. You're like a grown person. Maybe you're like, I don't know, 20-ish or something. And unless you're in a really competitive sport where they use all sorts of crazy things to get you to perform. Would we use that method as an adult to another adult? I mean, it's just like there's like a disconnect in my brain, right? It's like now you're an adult and you're let's say you're in a marriage and you're in this marriage and your wife or your partner says, you didn't take out the garbage, dude. Guess what you're not getting tonight? Now, maybe that works and maybe it doesn't. But we're not helping people be motivated to learn. You see, and I can think about the people in my life that have, and I went to Catholic school too. Good news, I got kicked out of Catholic school. But I get kicked out of Fairleigh Dickinson too. That's a whole nother show. But the thing I love about what you're doing is you're giving people options for them to empower themselves to learn. And punishment doesn't do that. I mean, there's a point by which punishment will get people to move. It's just like we think that people in the workplace are motivated by money. That works for about 6 months. Correct. Until they realize they're working at the most toxic place on the planet and there's just no amount of money that's going to work. Right. But the question I want to ask you is, your message and what you're bringing to the world is powerful. I want to know what we need to do to get people to listen. To really get the people that are administering these policies to be like Amy Sarah was to me, Dan Vandermas was to me, Brian McGorry was to me, Mary Louise Smith was to me. Because if it wasn't those people, I would still be homeless in New York, and I will tell you that for sure. But what do we need to do?
Were they all teachers?
Three of them were teachers. One of them was a boss.
Now, see, the reason I'm asking that question is because we probably will not remember who won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but you'll remember your grammar right. school teachers.
Yes, I will.
Yep.
And so in terms of how do we get that across? One is by compassion. Others is just is having the conversation. And you need folks to move into positions that kind of think this way. I am constantly being challenged to move up another level. And I'm constantly saying I'm good where I'm at this moment. But the argument people are making is we need more people to think like that in the decision-making areas. So one thing, the conversations need to be had, the modeling needs to be had, folks need to see the different, and that's what we're looking for at the Academy is to try to show folks the difference between our methodology versus traditional methodology. Because once folks start seeing, wait a minute, I see he's getting a lot more out of these boys over here than I'm getting over here. What is he doing? And then you start sharing with, well, you know, we don't suspend. What do you mean you don't suspend? I didn't say we didn't have consequences. I said we don't suspend. So once folks start saying, well, what do you do then? Okay, we work things out different ways. We do a lot of talking. We do a lot of circle talking. We do a lot of, you know, everybody has to be restored and made whole. You know, so not only is it, you know, I just say I'm sorry. Everybody who is offended or aggrieved has to now be made whole again. They have to be restored. So if the child offended the teacher, teacher has to be restored. Child offended a classmate, classmate has to be restored. If a parent had to be involved, parent has to be restored. Everybody that was a part of it has now become restored. So to answer your question, Dr. Pat, it really is more people learning and applying and being open-minded, not necessarily having the fixed mindset and the, you know, versus a growth mindset.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I don't know. I really don't know much about where we are with the whole suspension thing, but I will tell you this. I remember getting suspended myself and my other two sisters. My other two sisters, they were just, you know, there's a word for that. They would blow up the bathrooms with cherry bombs. Those are my other two sisters.
I remember those things.
Yeah, you remember that? But I remember us getting suspended. And my stepmama, she grabbed us and drug us right into the principal and said to the principal, "You are rewarding my children by suspending them." And the principal looked at her. She said, "Do you know that the best thing you could give them, the gift you give them, is telling them that they don't have to come to school?" She said, "I don't care where you put them. I don't care what class you put them in. It doesn't matter. Keep them here. Because what you're teaching them is if they just get a little bit sideways, they don't have to come to school. Then they get a little bit more, they don't have to come to school." Then we were like the revolving door of suspension until my mom went in there and said, this is not working.
And as I said earlier, I've been on both sides of the table. I've been in schools with 400, 500, 600 kids and had the highest suspension rate in the district because I had really challenging schools. This particular school is smaller. So I've seen where in having levied so many suspensions, nothing changed.
Yeah.
Whether they got the suspension or not, they still came back and did the same behavior when they came back from the suspension. So now that I'm doing this the other way, where we're actually getting a chance to talk and to process, and as you said, empower, like, okay, talk to me a little bit about what's another choice you could have made here.
Yeah.
And then as we go move forward, the next time you're in this situation, I'm going to be looking to see, did you make that choice or what choice did you make? And it puts the onus back on the child to really kind of think and reflect, like, okay. And the empowering piece that you were just talking about absolutely is there.
Go ahead, Mark. No. It's fascinating because, you know, I grew up in an era when if a kid was bad, in school, you got hit or you got subjected to these. And what I've seen is if you beat a dog enough, it's just going to become vicious.
Correct.
And then as an attorney, I saw that with juvenile clients that were treated badly. And then they're in my office as adults. So when you say there's consequences and you talk to them, it looks like it's not just how you deal with the student, but it's a whole integrative approach, like everybody connected. How does the consequences, instead of calling them punishment, how do the consequences for negative behaviors, how does that work?
Well, again, a lot of people confuse punishment and accountability, because you're still going to be accountable. Now, because I had a couple of kids fighting the other day and we didn't suspend and we haven't given them their consequences yet. And everybody's waiting to see what it's going to be. And again, the guidance counselor and I are sitting there, let me see, because we have corporal punishment. There's a lot of things we can't do that Mark, they could do when we were small. They can't do
them. Yeah.
But there are some things that we can do that they will hate having to do. I have a carpet in the, soon as we come into my front door, there's a carpet there. And I'm big on first impressions. So it's kind of like I've worked with the custodians and said, I want this carpet clean at all times when folks are coming in the front door. So I was talking to the guidance counselor and I said, maybe that's going to be their assignment for a little bit. They're going to have to come down and sweep the carpet every hour or so. Now, they are not going to want to sweep this carpet in front of their classmates. So if I can work it away and it helped them understand, well, you know, this is preparing you for a job, like the discipline and everything. Because this is another thing, you know, not to go too off point. Somebody said something about discipline. If you look at the definition of discipline, the definition of discipline is to teach. The definition of discipline is not punishment.
No, but that's where disciple comes from.
Right. We use the words interchangeably. And that's where people get really messed up because they think discipline is about, as Mark, as you just said, being hit or being suspended or what have you. I've been in schools where the teacher send a kid to my office and I'll talk to them and send them back. They'll get in the teacher's room and say, I sent the child to Mr. Mehta, he didn't do nothing. Like, yes, I did. I talked to the child.
Look, I want to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the word mastermind.
Yes, indeed.
I had a really interesting experience with this. I want to talk about this and, you know, talk about also, you know, what you're bringing forward to not just help motivate, encourage people to really change the landscape of the way we even think about this, right? Because modeling is so important, but to get groups of adults to think about modeling and to really see what that looks like in incremental steps is so important. Love to talk to you. Before we go to break, what's the best way for people to find out more about you, to listen to your shows, all of the above?
Okay, the best way to, the hub I call it, it would be my website, and which is my name, MarcaMedley.com, MarcaMedley.com. That's where Mark Anthony and I kind of differ in terms of he's Mark with a K, I'm Mark with a C, but it's MarcaMedley.com. That's the best way because that's linked to all of my sites. And everything is there. There's an 800 number there, contact form there. The radio show is on Saturday mornings here on the East Coast. I'm actually on the air from 6 to 9 a.m. And my guests appear at 7 a.m. And that's on gobrave.org, G-O-B-R-A-V-E.org. And that's it. They can get that from the website as well. So if they go to my website, everything's there, markamedley.com.
I love it. And Mark Anthony as well. Mark, why don't you give out your website? And then we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll take your questions. You know, what questions do you have for Mark Medley? You know, is there a situation that's really giving yourself a wrinkle in your thinker? Mark, how do people find out about you and tell them about how to get a copy of your book?
My website is the same as my book, which is afterlifefrequency.com. And, you know, I have to share something. Since you both are basically from New York City, I was just notified by Columbia University that my book, The Afterlife Frequency, has been submitted for a Pulitzer Prize.
Wow. Congratulations.
So,
wow.
I'm like, this week has just been dizzying. So if people want to find out about my book, booking a reading with me, signing up for my newsletter, I believe in one-stop shopping like Mark Medley, afterlifefrequency.com. And yeah, we'll be taking calls from listeners, 1-800-930-2819. If you have a question for us or for Professor Medley, let's focus on his work this episode. 1-800-930-2819.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about how do you take the limits off of your future. Yes, believe it or not, we do that. We put them limits right on there, smack them in a box, and we call it a day. When we come back, we're taking the limits off of all of it. We'll be right back.
The Dr. Pat Show.
The Dr. Pat Show.
The Dr. Pat Show.
This is it, the energy of heart to heart, mind to mind, love to love. These are the questions that people have and rarely state. When we have an internal transformation and we see things differently, what does it mean to step into the full nature of being a spiritual being? How am I to be? This is it. Every day, you have to do something outrageously positive. It is so absolutely relevant because what I've seen in humanity, despite what's in the headlines, I'm so struck by the heroes that have come forward. I'm just absolutely in awe. The idea generators and superheroes. All of you, you are the best listening audience in the world, and we are bringing it in 2021.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Yeah, boy, I'm loving it. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Psychic and The Doc. And we have a very special guest today, really super. Today, listen to this. If I can help somebody, then my living will not be in vain. That is with our guest today, Mark Medley. And when we say those words, it's one thing to say them. It's another thing when you step out and you commit to that life. And then you figure out how to show up in that way. Myself and Mark Anthony, we love doing the show with all of you. Like I said, if you've got a question for us today and you want to know what does it look like to be empowered beyond the level by which you can see your life today? What does it mean for you to take a look at an imaginary state of your future that seems for you to have a limit on it and move beyond the limitation, right? Mark Anthony?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Dr. Pat, before we get to Mastermind, there's something I wanted to ask. The handbook for the Young Men's Leadership Academy, yes, it talks about uniforms. And I know that many private schools require them. And I've spent a lot of time in the UK and Japan, and I remember seeing all the kids in their uniforms going to school. What are your thoughts on this? And how do you feel that that wearing uniforms influences the learning environment?
Couple of things, and oddly enough, or ironically enough, I actually had on, and I took the vest off. I actually had on the uniform vest on top of this, and I took it off for the show. But the thinking behind it is this: one, we try to minimize as many distractions as possible. That's one of the reasons it's single gender. And I was talking to one of the boys today, and I asked him that question. I said, yes, that's right. The little girlies would be a distraction for you.
Yep.
The same thing with the clothing. Rather than focusing on who has the most expensive sneakers, who has the latest fashion, everybody's in their particular uniform. For our younger children, is a yellow polo with our logo on it, with gray pants. For our older children, it's the same yellow polo with navy blue pants. And then after Christmas, when we come back in January, that's when we go into tie and vest. So the thinking is everybody, you know, is pretty much, it doesn't necessarily, not that they have to think the same way, but we're looking the same. Just like, again, I'm gonna use the sports analogy. It's like a football team or a basketball team, because we really promote the team and the family atmosphere. And the uniform is a part of that. Yeah. So I wear it as the principal. I'm wearing the same uniform as a student.
You know, I'll say this about uniforms for the people who are complaining about them. Let me tell you, in the morning, it really cuts down your prep time. You don't have to think about what you got to wear. It's that. But also for getting out in the workforce, because the problem with high schools, they don't prepare you for life. I mean, kids don't know how to fill out a checkbook or balance a checkbook, set up a monthly budget. You know, yeah, algebra is great. Calculus is great. But I think it ought to be required that people know how to, okay, let's say you make $3,000 a month. How do you budget that? You know, how do you pay your bills? How do you do those things? And, you know, uniforms, you know, you're going to have to work most likely in some place that has some form of a dress code. Okay. So that gets you in the mindset of that. I think it's brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. One of the things I want to get back to, you said along those lines too, which is really so important. I work with women. I work with women of all ages. I work with women in addiction and drug recovery. And that's my service. Let's just call it that. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, distractions are a killer. and as much as we want to really socialize people, and as much as we want to socialize, you know, to be like gender neutral in so many ways, when we're talking about developmentally, when I'm working with the ladies, all eyes right here. and so what you're doing is you're removing an obstacle that would limit a potentiality.
Absolutely, because there are so many distractions out there. So if we take the clothing out of the equation, yep, if we take that age group with the hormones and everything's puberty and everything else out of the equation, that's two major things out of the equation right there.
Yeah, puberty and menopause, they'll kill you.
Distraction free, But that's two we don't have.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to the mastermind because I love this. And you're going to share your screen. And the reason I love this is because we have these imaginary limits on our lives. And I become the preacher of all time when I'm talking with these women to take the limits off their lives, to take the limits off your future, take the limits off your abundance, you know, take the limits off learning from our mistakes, especially if you're in recovery. And I want to ask you about your mastermind, because sometimes the mastermind are not like people that are even still here anymore. But tell me about your key to mastermind. By the way, someone schooled me that I shouldn't be using the word mastermind with young people. And I said, you obviously never worked with young people, because you tell a young group of people they're in a mastermind group and they are going out there and getting logos for it and caps for it and everything else. But how do you use your mastermind group? And I want to know from you specifically, what have they been telling you there, Mark?
Well, in terms of, there's a couple of ways that I use. One is the chart that I'm going to show you in a couple of minutes when I share screen, but the other way is in the way that I decorate my office. In my office, on all of the walls, there are photos of all the folks, like my favorite folks. Matter of fact, everybody who is on my wall is one of the members on the mastermind group. Everybody in the mastermind group is not on my wall. Let's put it that way. So when you start talking Martin Luther King, when you start talking Alvin Clayton Powell, when you start talking Gandhi, they're all on my walls in the office. So I use them as teachable moments. Whenever the boys are in my office, we're constantly having conversation about the folks hanging around the walls. So that's one way, like we were talking about it today, like our feng shui, however they say that, that's our feng shui. That's the environment that's created in the office. It's for motivation and inspiration. But then I have, for me personally, and again, I'll share these same people with the boys, is an actual chart that I put together with almost like me sitting at a table or a round table with advisors. And I try to help the boys. And you were talking earlier about mentors. Well, that's part of it. It's like folks mentoring. So I have folks who are my mentors, whether they're living or dead, folks that have been here and transitioned, or folks who are still here. And for the folks who are still here, of course, I can call them up on the telephone and go visit them. For the folks who have transitioned, and they don't have to be people that I've ever met personally. They could be the famous people. As I said, I have the Martin Luther Kings, the Gandhis, the Mother Teresa's, Jesus, Chuck Yeager, Clara Hale, Jackie Robinson. I have, you know, Michelle Obama, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie. Those are the folks, if you look at the chart, you'll see on there, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela. And it's a wide variety of folks with their beliefs, thoughts, and their actions. So whenever in many instances, when I'm faced with a situation that I'm really having to think on, I'll be looking to these folks to kind of like talk to me. What would you do in this situation? How should I handle this?
You know, doesn't that really talk to the effect that we are all really connected in more ways than we can imagine? And help is always a breath away. I had a mentor that told me that, you know, I never understood it till I was way older. But she would always say, you know, Pat, you're going to get it someday. Help is going to be a breath away. And it, you know, I mean, you hear it, but I never forgot it. You notice I didn't forget that. Even though it took me like a decade to figure out what she meant. But health is always a breath away. And what you're really helping people understand is we're never really alone, are we?
Correct. That, and I think, Mark, I've seen it in his book of multiple places about energy never dying.
Right.
So these folks, even though some of them have been gone for years from the face of the earth, their energy is still here.
You know what? I'm looking at all these people, and this is something that Dr. Pat and I have been talking about throughout the show, The Psychic and the Doc, but particularly in the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Fear. Every single one of these people were confronted with frightening scenarios. And bravery isn't the absence of fear. Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's doing it even though you're afraid.
Correct. And that is a message that we try to get across to the boys as well, because, you know, nobody wants to act as if they're afraid. And what we try to help them understand, and again, my mom will be 83 next week, God bless. And from the time I was a child, she and my dad always told me and my sister, think for yourself.
Yeah.
And in many instances, the boys will come to my office and the first thing they'll say is everybody else was doing it. And Mark, to your point, that's where we'll get into that courage thing. Like, well, do you understand how much courage it would take for you to stand up and say, I understand that's what you all want to do, but I'm not doing that. I'm not going down that road with you. I want to focus on my studies. I don't want to play around today. That takes more courage. Or if one of your classmates hits you and you choose not to hit back, that takes more courage not to hit back. It's easy to hit back. It's tough to sit there and take a hit and not hit back. And you can, I tell them all the time, look, you could tell your classmate, boy, I'd love to tighten you up right now, but because we're in this school, I'm going to make the choice that I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I introduced you using Gandhi, and Gandhi was so brilliant because he said, the way we're going to get the British out of India is not to hit back. And somebody once said, well, you're passive resistance. He said, there's nothing passive about it.
Correct.
It is nonviolent non-cooperation. He said, the only way the British can dominate us, 300,000 British soldiers were holding down 300 million Indians at the time. He says, because we cooperate with it. When you cooperate with injustice, when you cooperate with poverty, when you cooperate with oppression, you allow it to happen. And Gandhi showed the world there is another. It would have been very easy for the Indians to have risen up and started attacking the British because it was during World War II and all that. But he said, no. And he basically, what he did is he brought the thinking of the British aristocracy up to his level, and they realized that it's going to be in our best interest just to leave. And so I find it very interesting that you said, if somebody hits you, yeah, you want to hit them back. And I'm Italian, so I've got that genetic predisposition, you know, that Tony Soprano gene in there. And that's what we have to overcome. That's what Jesus, you have Jesus on your list. You have Maya Angelou, you have Mother Teresa, you have all these very inspiring people of mastermind. You know, Jesus said, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Correct. Well, that sounds nice, but that's a lot harder.
All these things, and that's what I'm saying. It's easy. It's real easy to hit back. That's the easiest thing you can
that's
do.
That's the easiest thing to do.
To not hit you back when you know you want to. It's tough not to retaliate when you know you want to.
I love this conversation because I wonder if you've done this. I want to just hear this, because when I work with the ladies, they always ask me, we talk about mastermind groups, and, you know, certainly I'm going to really take a look at what you're doing there. They could really benefit from that. But they always ask me, do you have a modern day mastermind? Do you have somebody you're watching in the modern day? And I always feel bad, you know, because I always bring forward who I'm watching, who has inspired me most in 2021. And they look at me like, well, we thought you would say this one. And you, but who you just said? Angela Merkel? You said who? What? Merkel? And I said, yeah. Yeah. Look her up. Go to Wikipedia. Go look her up. And I said, by the way, not only look her up, listen to a couple of things she says. Right. Now, and they look, and they come back, and we come back, and the response is always different. But it's usually, she's from Germany. I said, yeah, last I checked.
That's right.
And I said, find somebody in your own modern day time. I said, if you'd asked me when I was a youngster, when I was your age, I would have said Bob Dylan.
Right.
I would have said Bob Dylan. And they're like, who? And I would have said, yes, Bob Dylan.
Blowing in the wind. That's right. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
But isn't it important for the youth that you work with, these young men, to find the hero within themselves?
Yes, it is.
And the heroes in the world.
This is the thing. And I love this because especially since I know Mark, and as I assume you as well, deal with synchronicities. So the fact that this conversation is coming up with the same words that I said earlier today, again, sharing with students, we were talking about leadership because it's a leadership school. And we said, well, this is the deal. We're trying to help you lead yourself, because if you can't lead yourself, you're never going to be able to lead anyone else.
Yeah.
Same holds true. If you don't love yourself, you're not going to be able to really have intimate relationships or love anybody else. And then the other part of that is, well, if you don't love yourself, how can you expect somebody else to love you? All right. But from the leadership standpoint, when we were having our little coaching session, we said, let us help you understand what we're trying to do here. We're trying to help you be able to lead yourself. So that discipline that we were just talking about, not hitting back whenever you want to hit back, that's leading yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once you demonstrate it, now the other classmates see you do that and they say, whoa, wait a minute, such and such didn't. Now that, okay, well, you know, maybe since he didn't, I'll try not to hit back too.
I want to talk a little bit about this. And Mark, I'd love for you to get your questions in here too. I'm a big believer in second chances. I really am. Yeah. And people always ask me, I'm starting to talk about this. And this is a really odd thing that happened to me. I've been talking about a boss of mine that gave me a second chance. And I just found out he passed away in September. But I've been talking about it for a month on air. And it was a tough lesson for me. It was a really tough lesson for me. Because I didn't understand about work. I didn't understand about respect. And he taught me that in 5 minutes. And I want to ask you about this, because you pick up a book and it says it takes years. But I can remember moments in my life by someone like you. You know, Principal Mark, someone like you, moments that I never forgot. How do we change that story?
Well, okay, the part about moments you'll never forget, that is one of the beauties of education and teaching. I did an exercise with our teachers. We had a retreat over the summer. And the exercise was, they had to describe and tell me an experience with their favorite teacher, and describe and tell me an experience with their least favorite teacher. These folks, they're like in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. They still could remember that experience from when they were a child. Both the positive one and the negative one. And what I discovered was a lot of the stories that they told in their negative popped out in some of the behaviors that I see in them as they teach.
Wow.
A lot of the style that they teach in, I saw it jump right out from their stories of negative experiences with teachers. But at the same time, when they gave their experiences with the positive teacher, they never forgot. So as teachers and educators, everything that we do with children, they do not forget. We may not think they forget, but we may think they forget, but they don't. There's an exercise whenever at graduation time I do with the eighth graders. We have some downtime from graduation practice. I said, you have an opportunity to mimic or mock or imitate anybody in the building. And when I tell you the kids can imitate us, they had my walk, my talk, my laugh. They had other staff members. My point is, when we think they're not watching us, they are. When we think they're not paying attention to us, they are. Because if you ask them to, all right, I want you to imitate Mr. Medley. They had me down to a T. Things that I had no idea they were watching or paying attention to, they had. So how does that happen, Dr. Pat? I know a lot of times in church we will say the only Bible some people will see is your life.
Oh yeah.
They're not going to pick up the book. They're not going to read, but they do see your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So as we model and as we, you know, walk our walk, talk our talk, and they line up, that's whenever you start seeing folks begin to say, I want to be like, that's the other thing. And you were talking legacy earlier. That's the other thing about teaching as well. Like, the hope is always that whether we're bringing guest speakers or whether it's one of us, that the child will say, I want to be like such and such whenever I grow up.
Yeah. I love that we're talking about this. I wish we had more time to speak with you, and I hope you will come back because the work that you're doing and the platform of allowing young students, young men, to step fully into the absolute truth of who they are, we have to do more of that. We have to sometimes hold the faith for them where they don't have the faith or belief in themselves, right, Mark?
Yeah, that is correct. And a lot of work, and I didn't get into that, we do as well as we get into our ancestry.
Oh, yeah.
Our ethnicities, our histories. We get into where did our ancestors come from? What is your ethnic background? Why is this so important? How does this connect to the contribution to the world and what's going on today? Yes. We do a lot of ancestral work.
Yeah,
you know, I think that ought to be the topic of our next show.
Yeah.
Is where did we come from? You know, our ancestors, and how does that influence us?
Think that's a good one.
And Mark, you brought up an important thing. Children imitate you because they spend more time with you than they probably do with their parents.
Correct.
And that's an important lesson to learn for children. Also, that when they start working, they're going to be spending more time with their coworkers than they probably will be with their family, at least, you know, on a Monday to Friday type job. So I know we're running out of time. And Professor Mark Medley, thank you so much. And folks can find you at Mark, M-A-R-C-A, Medley, M-E-D-L-E-Y.com.
Correct.
And I'm recommending, highly suggesting to all of our listeners, please check out markmedley.com. You're also the host of the Reading Circle radio show, which I'm looking forward to being on October 30th.
You're going to be with me October 30th.
October 30th, right before Halloween.
Early morning Eastern
time. Yeah, a lawyer who sees dead people. What could be scarier for your Halloween show?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, thank you so much. Mark, really quickly, what's your personal message, Mark Medley? What do you want to leave us with today?
I think for me, I guess the question many times folks will ask, what drives me? What drives me is a young man who grew up in an urban area, wasn't rich, wasn't poor, I mean, wasn't dirt poor, but didn't even know we were poor, has traveled the world, been to 35 out of the 50 states, have been all over Europe, has been all over the Caribbean, and has had the opportunity to meet and do so many things. And what drives me is if it can happen for me, we can make it happen for you. And so if I can help you get there, if you can surpass me, I'm okay with that, because what's for you doesn't take away from me. And what I have does not take away from you. So if you go beyond me, I'm okay with that. I'm not going to hold you back. So that would be my closing message. And back to the title, if I can help somebody as I pass along, then my living will not be in vain. Very quickly to end it, I had a guest on my show a couple of weeks ago. He asked a significant question. If you had to write your own obituary, what would it say? So that's where the legacy comes in. I want to be able to write an obituary that made a contribution to the world.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
Amen to that.
Thank you.
I firmly believe it. Thank you, Professor Medley. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Dr. Yep. Pat, as always. And yep. We'll be back next Thursday, The Psychic and the Doc.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, all of you. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to The Psychic and the Doc with Mark Anthony and me, Dr. Pat Basile, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, look, come back next week so we can explore with you more of life's many challenges and learn from fascinating guests. And you know what? Even Mark and me. We'll connect you and discover insights from people in this life and from the afterlife. Extraordinary problems? Yeah, they do. They require extraordinary solutions. But step into the world of possibilities with us on The Psychic and the Doc. That's every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That's TransformationTalkRadio.com. And don't forget, we're also live face-to-face on Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.